Trend number one, anti-science and pseudoscience. We hear about science every day in the news, but few of us stop to consider what it is, both at its best and at its worst. Science is the practice of discovering what is true by using the scientific method. According to the scientific method, researchers make an observation that uncovers a gap in our knowledge. They devise a hypothesis to explain that gap. Then, they design an experiment to test the hypothesis. If the hypothesis can be proven false through the experiment, it is rejected. If, on the other hand, it can be verified beyond a reasonable doubt, then it becomes a law. In this system, everything is open to testing and validation. Anti-science, by contrast, is the uncritical reliance on some sort of received wisdom or revelation, such as that found in the Bible, the Quran, or the Hindu Vedas. Anti-scientific people refuse to test their beliefs, and they persecute anyone who calls those beliefs into question. This is what Galileo faced in 1633 when he was interrogated by the Inquisition because he had written that the Earth revolves around the sun and was not the center of the universe. On the other hand, pseudoscience is a different way of sidestepping real science by using what appears to be the scientific method to create the impression that something has been rigorously validated, when in fact it merely represents the beliefs and biases of those presenting it. In spite of these impediments, true and honest use of the scientific method has proven so effective in improving our quality of life that it's now the universal standard. It has improved our health, extended our lifespan, increased our standard of living, and helped us to work more effectively at those tasks that sustain life and society. Yet, even as it has advanced, a deep understanding of science has been available only to a small fraction of the population. Even many accredited scientists are so steeped in their narrow specialties that they are ill-prepared to evaluate important work in other fields. As the popular press frequently points out, the dominance of Western culture by scientific experts, whose methods and assumptions are little understood by the general public, has encouraged a growing anti-science backlash. This backlash fits the historical pattern that we see going back to Galileo. However, because it's so well understood, this movement is manageable. It represents a genuine threat today only in rigid theocracies, such as modern-day Iran. On the other hand, it's precisely because the general public now typically accepts almost everything that's said by accredited scientists, or people posing as scientific experts, that pseudoscience poses such a big threat. While much of our attention is focused on the dangers of anti-science coming primarily from the political right, we're prone to ignore the equally virulent pseudoscience threat primarily coming from the political left. Why is the pseudoscience threat mostly a left-wing phenomenon? Because a disproportionate share of academics lean toward the left in terms of their politics and values. Legendary futurists Alvin and Heidi Toffler, authors of the 1970 bestseller Future Shock, highlight this asymmetry in their 2006 book, Revolutionary Wealth. The Tofflers focus on the left's pseudoscience primarily because of its hypocrisy. The left claims that the right is undermining legitimate science. For example, the mainstream media zero in on the threat of anti-science put forth by a few fringe groups on the religious right. But then, the media willingly present anything published by a scientist with academic credentials as proven scientific fact, despite any obvious axes the researcher wants to grind. The Tofflers take pains to point out that there have recently been a whole set of problems with scientific research published by those on the left, among those for whom scientific evidence is supposed to be the highest form of truth. And just as few people would have looked among Catholic priests a generation ago for pedophiles, few today are expecting professors at leading universities to play fast and loose with the data in an effort to promote their careers and deeply held worldviews. But in fact, that's exactly where we need to be looking. So while we'll continue to be alert for anti-science on the right, most people on both sides can easily identify that. On the contrary, the pseudoscience on the left poses a more pernicious problem, because it's not generally recognized for what it is. When people begin to accept scientific studies presented by researchers as if they were divine revelations pronounced by some medieval pope, even the best scientists are tempted to bend research results to support politically motivated beliefs. Moreover, only a few people are really qualified to analyze the data, and many of those will inevitably share the biases of the researcher. This tendency of experts to validate the claims of other experts when those claims support their biases, coupled with the inability of the general public to comprehend the argument on either side, increasingly leads to bad policy decisions that adversely impact society globally. For example, food shortages and malaria are killing millions in Africa because DDT has been banned, based on flawed science. Vaccines have been in short supply because of pseudoscience used by trial lawyers to sue pharmaceutical manufacturers. Or consider the European attack on genetically modified foods. This led to a decidedly inhumane course of action when those foods were denied to starving people in Zimbabwe. This occurred despite the fact that, according to the Western Farm Press, more than 1 billion acres of genetically modified crops have been grown, and not one case of ill effects has ever been credibly linked to these crops. Moreover, these biotech crops have been proven to reduce the need for chemicals, such as pesticides and fertilizers, thereby improving the environment. And consider the thousands of lives that might have been saved during the September 11 terrorist attacks if not for pseudoscience. The towers of the World Trade Center collapsed because a lack of asbestos insulation allowed their steel skeletons to melt. According to Stephen Malloy, an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute and the publisher of JunkScience.com, the hysteria about asbestos prevented the fireproofing material from being used on the upper floors of the World Trade Center. Another example of a pseudoscience bias among researchers can be found in the debate over global warming. The most visible recent attempt to trumpet global warming is Al Gore's movie An Inconvenient Truth, which portrays stronger hurricanes, more tropical diseases, and melting ice sheets inundating cities. To reinforce the anecdotal evidence, Gore claims that the debate about global warming has ended, and the scientific community has reached a unanimous conclusion that climate change is a reality and that mankind is causing it. The trouble, according to a Wall Street Journal investigation, is that this statement simply cannot be supported by the facts as substantiated by the scientific method. In fact, there has not been an organized scientific debate, and the irrefutable evidence we have leads to one simple conclusion. We don't have enough information to know the answer. What we do know is that conditions in the atmosphere and oceans vary widely over time by themselves. Glaciers advance and retreat on their own. And in fact, the ice sheets on both Greenland and Antarctica are actually thickening, according to the new book Unstoppable Global Warming by Dennis T. Avery, a former senior policy analyst for the U.S. State Department. In light of the trend towards pseudoscience and anti-science, we offer these 5 forecasts. First, scientific fraud will continue to proliferate as competition and political rivalry become more intense. As in every profession, there are good scientists and bad scientists. They compete for grant money, publication, and attention. But people are smart, and this will increase their skepticism when confronted by nonsensical claims from supposedly legitimate scientists. This, in turn, will motivate more people to become more scientifically literate. Second, stricter controls will be put in place to make sure that government grant money goes only to legitimate scientists who refrain from making unverifiable claims. Stronger peer review and better analysis of data will result in a much clearer picture of what can be proven and what is simply wishful thinking. Third, much of the conventional wisdom about so-called hazardous chemicals and products will be reconsidered as faulty studies are debunked. For example, just as the technique of spraying asbestos could be resurrected to protect high-rise buildings from fire, we may soon lift the ban against DDT to protect millions of people in third-world countries from malaria. Fourth, between now and 2030, most of the apparent contradictions between science and religious faith will be reconciled. However, this conflict is going to get hotter before it cools off. One of the most exciting books on this topic is Creation as Science by former Caltech astrophysicist Hugh Ross. In a similar vein, the New York Times published a roundup of books by other scientists discussing their own religious beliefs and how those beliefs can coexist with their careers in science. Among these scientists was the geneticist who headed the NIH's Human Genome Project in the 1990s, an astronomer who teaches at Harvard, and an evolutionary biologist who teaches at Stanford. And fifth, the marriage of science and technology will continue to provide improvements in human health and standards of living, despite the best efforts of anti-science and pseudoscience advocates. That new world, which we are now creating, will be more hospitable to religious freedom than ever before. In fact, according to a recent report in Foreign Affairs, there is more democracy, more political freedom, more education, and more religious freedom in the world today than at any time in recorded history. We expect this trend to continue, both here and abroad.